rapid growth, and we're entering a period of manufacturing sector recession, and that's the sector we'd really depend on in Oregon's economy. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Ewing.
Thank you, Nicholas.
I don't think you know that for sure.
On page 10, you show general fund resources declined by $113 million from December, and you show lottery revenue increased by $6.9 million from last December. So what does that mean? People gamble more when they're unemployed?
We'll see.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, I don't think that's necessarily the case, although there, someone could probably show you some evidence that there is some truth to that. I think this forecast for lottery would still be up by a like amount, regardless of where we were going with the general fund forecast. Video receipts have been very strong lately, before even the December forecast and before this forecast. We've been tracking them very closely to see if that strong growth is sustainable, and now we're starting to believe that, in fact, it is. So that's where you see that increasing. Also, there was an addition of a new game at lottery that was not in the December forecast, so that accounts for some of the change. It's just a brand new game altogether that wasn't there before and gives you a few million dollars a year that we didn't have. So I wouldn't necessarily go straight to the assumption that, because you're unemployed, people gamble more.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Briefly, following up on Senator Yee's comments about the lottery, in terms of did you calculate any increases in lottery revenues based upon the fact that the lottery has squirreled away some $96 million so that they can go and implement line games after we leave the session? I'm just curious if any of that has been calculated into your calculations.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hill, the current year's transfer amounts include or net of the amount the lottery is holding back, but future forecasts are current law-based only, so they do not include any possibility of line games or anything that would be outside of the scope that lottery is doing right now.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Any more questions? Thank you both very much. We're going to move to another item on our agenda, other business, public employees retirement system, and I'm going to ask Don Morgan, a board member, and Jim Whiteco, executive director of PERS. They would both come up and represent. Would you like to give us a report on PERS, please?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The ORS directs the PERS board to submit preliminary proposals to the Legislative Review Agency, Joint Committee on Ways and Means, at least 30 days prior to crediting earnings in the previous accounts and reserves. The board anticipates final decision 2000 income crediting will be made in its March 23, 2001 meeting. At its February 13th meeting, the board approved preliminary distributions of 0.2% to the Tier 2 regular accounts and minus 3.22% to the variable accounts. To be a withdrawal from the variable accounts. By statute, Tier 1 regular accounts are entitled to a minimum of 8%. Since the actual earnings are well below that, the preliminary distribution to Tier 1 accounts will amount to 8%, and there's no guaranteed distribution accounts for the variable accounts, so the both Tier 1 and Tier 2 variable accounts will receive a decrease of 3.22% of their account balances. The statute provides for gain-loss reserve to be set aside in the earnings to cover periods when Tier 1 member accounts and related reserve earn less than 8%. The reserves will be used to provide this 8% distribution to Tier 1 accounts. At the end of 1999 earnings year, the reserve was funded at 21.7 months, at 72% of its stated goal of 30 months, which it established a couple of years ago. After making a guaranteed distribution to Tier 1 accounts for the 2000 earnings, the reserve will be funded at 10.4 months, or 35% of its stated goal of 30 months. The distribution accounts amounts are preliminary, and as a result, are subject to change at the March 2001 meeting of the PERS board. However, no significant changes are expected, and your general government subcommittee recommends acknowledging the receipt of the report.
Hey, thank you very much. Questions? Representative Westwood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Jim?
Don, thanks for joining us this morning. I mean, we just heard the report. You know the economy is drifting and the stock market is not exactly headed in a positive direction. The gain-loss reserve is perilously low. My first question is, what does the board plan to do to restore the gain-loss ratio to, you know, your goal of 30 months? I think it's down to about 10 months now of no earnings projected growth. I mean, that is, I think we've all got to acknowledge, that is very, very low and very, has a great deal of impact on future employees or Tier 1 employees. The my question to you is what is your specific plans to get that gain-loss ratio up to the 30-month reserve goal?
Well, co-chairs, members of the committee, if I could maybe answer that in two parts, I could discuss what opportunities are open to the board, and our board member Morgan could comment on at least her perception as a board member about board's intentions. First of all, the board certainly does have the statutory authority to put money into the gain loss reserve. And in fact, historically it has. There's been some dispute over the amounts, the timing, and so on. But the board cannot manufacture an opportunity to do so. It has to be given that opportunity by events in the marketplace. The markets are actually down year to date. If the year ended today where the markets are, we would consume the remaining part of the gain loss reserve, unless for some miraculous reason our fund did dramatically better than the market. We did do much better than the market last year, but we would have to do significantly better. But things could change over the course of the year. So the only point that I would make is that the board doesn't have the power independently to put money into the board. First, it must face the opportunity to do so.
Yes. In the board's general way of doing things, and statutorily, we can only put money from excess earnings into the gain loss reserve, which means that you have to have excess earnings before you can put them in there. So we have no opportunity to add to the gain loss reserve this year. If there are excess earnings, the board's past practice, and I see no reason to believe it would be any different, is that anything above the 8% guarantee would be returned to the gain loss reserve in order to recoup what has been lost and to move, depending on how big that excess is, to move to the 30-month reserve. But there's no way of knowing when that will happen, so I can't give you an exact plan because we've been unable to find anyone willing to give us a projection on when that will happen.
Yes. Well, I guess, Don, is there anything the legislature can do to assist you through passage of legislation that would allow us to get the gain loss reserve up to a, you know, more, I think, comfortable level?
I am unaware of anything that you could do to make that happen, but I don't claim to be an expert on legislative remedies.
Chair?
Yes.
Well, I mean, would a cap on distributions of Tier 1 members help in any way?
I don't know the answer to whether that would help.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, the issue with a cap on distributions entangles with the question of whether or not the legislature has the ability to make changes, significant changes in the Tier 1 program and pass muster with the Supreme Court's notion of contract rights. I would defer to the Department of Justice as to exactly where that line is drawn, and I've discussed this with them many times, and I believe in summary I can say no one knows where that line is drawn. The statute certainly doesn't need to be fixed in the sense that the board already has the authority to put money into the gain loss reserve. The statute also contemplates the notion of actually running a deficit as well. That's built into the statute. The board has followed a practice generally of pre-funding the risk of years like last year and so far this year of shortfalls below the guarantee. And so that's been the past board practice. But whether or not a cap would pass muster with contract rights, with the contract rights issue, is an unknown to us, and I believe a subject of some controversy.
Well, Jim, I understand your answer, and you're probably asking yourself some of these same questions. I mean, we're just coming out of the greatest economy in the history of the planet. You know, our reserves are down to 10 months. I appreciate your goal of 30 months. I think that's an appropriate goal. You know, what can we do? I mean, I think all of us, employees, legislature, state employers, we all recognize we have a problem, and we're looking to you for help, leadership, and guidance. What can we do?
Well, I can respond, Mr. Chairman, by saying at least echoing a question of one of Board Member Morgan's colleagues in a public meeting recently that was on this question. We have been doing some work on the Tier 1 program, and the fact that it is now a quite a different program than it was when it was created in 1946, in that it's finite. It will come to an end 40 years hence. And one of the issues that we're studying is under what financial outcomes will it produce for the system as a whole as it winds down. And it's a subject of some controversy and an extremely complex question. Board Member Harchenko, who I hoped would be able to join us today, but she's out of town, posed the question in the public meeting, what does the statute tell us about what we're supposed to do in winding down the now finite Tier 1 program? And in fact, the statute is silent on that question in terms of instructions to the board and to the agency. The gain loss reserve is part of the Tier 1 program mechanisms. So there is some open space in the statute in terms of what the legislature would desire from the board in that respect. That doesn't mean that the board lacks tools to deal with it. The statute's just silent as to exactly how the board is supposed to use those tools that it already has.
Yes.
Jim, I heard you discuss the potential legality of a statutory cap, but I did not hear you answer the question when I asked, would a cap help balance this out if it were permissible, legal, and implementable?
Well, I would like to have the ability to think about that question a little bit more, but the notion of a cap, one of the consequences of a cap would be that all excess earnings above 8% would immediately go into the gain loss reserve or some other vessel that would be created statutorily, and that it would inevitably result in a more rapid buildup of reserves than has been the case in past board decisions. So in that sense, if you believe it addresses the problem that you're concerned about, then it would help.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Representative Schrader.
Thank you, sir. Just a couple of questions, if I may. If I understand it right, PERS's investments this past biennium have done actually pretty well, and they've not lost a lot of money. So that raises concern to me that this is a outfit that's done its usual extraordinary job in a very difficult economy, and yet our reserves have been cut in half. And so I concur with Co-Chair Westland. This is potentially a very, very serious problem. And definitionally, you said the statute says you can only put, at this point in time, excess earnings in. Is there a definition in statute that prohibits past excess earnings that have been credited to the accounts from still be considered past excess earnings for the purposes of funding the gain loss reserve in this type of situation?
In our, Mr. Chairman and Representative Schrader, in past discussions, we have looked at every aspect of Tier 1 that we can think of, and we've asked many hypothetical questions. I certainly don't want to leave the impression that the staff, or certainly not the board, and Board Member Morgan can speak to this as well, has ever considered that possibility. But we have looked at all the aspects of the Tier 1 program and asked the question, you know, has this ever been done? Is this possible under statute? Not asking the question, one, is it wise, and two, is whether or not the legislature would actually want us to do it. So we have looked at that, but only cursorily, because it is It is an even murkier area, and it drives at the heart of the contract rights issue, because these are monies that have been credited to members' accounts. We have absolutely no guidance from the legislature as to whether or not that's wise public policy. So the conversation probably took all of 2 or 3 minutes as we went through each and every aspect of the Tier 1 program, looking at its financial dynamics.
Just quickly follow up.
Okay.
And that has not been adjudicated then? That definition has not been?
It's not even been proposed, nor has it ever even been analyzed.
Okay.
Senator Trow.
Is this an unprecedented occurrence, having to dip into this fund to this extent?
I would ask the staff if there's some history to this, because both Board Member Morgan and, although Board Member's Morgan's experience with the system is longer than mine.
I sort of remember one other time when we did it.
We have both funded the reserve significantly in past times, and there's a history in the submission that we made to the subcommittee. But I think that in recent times, we've had a positively funded gain-loss reserve, and I think that at least in recent times, this is as close as we've come to actually running a deficit in modern times. Is that correct, Dale? We actually have this chart or the table if you'd like to see it.
That's great. So it's not precedented, so we don't have a history of how we deal with this. Normally, if the fund ran out of money and you couldn't recoup it immediately, you would simply borrow to meet that obligation. Is that what would happen?
Co-Chair Senator Cho, there's actually not very much controversy over what we would do. The statute is fairly clear on this subject. We would, in essence, book this as a deficit.
Mm-hmm.
Promissory notes, if you will, of sorts, to the fund. We'd run a negative account,
mm-hmm.
and the statute tells us that then in subsequent years, if there are excess earnings, the board doesn't have the latitude at that point to put them into a gain-loss reserve. They must immediately go to fund the deficit.
Okay.
So I don't believe there's much controversy over what we would do if we did it this year and we were, in fact, in deficit, because we had to grant the 8% guarantee and we did not have the money to do it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Is there further questions? Thank you both very much. I think you can see that there's some real concern on the part of the legislature where we're headed with this, and appreciate both of you and your staff coming down here today to respond to these questions.
Well, co-chairs, members of the committee, we share that concern, and I want to make sure that all members understand that we are ready at a moment's notice to come down and answer questions and help you in any way that we can.
Okay. Thank you. Is there a motion to acknowledge receipt of the report?
Mm-hmm.
Representative Butler moves that the committee acknowledge receipt of the report. Is there further discussion? Is there objection? No, it's been so approved. Thank you very much. We'll resort to our first item on the agenda, budget bills reported out of subcommittee, House Bill 5009, Council on Court Procedures. Senator Trow.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. This is the budget for the Council on Court Procedures. The council was established in 1977 and is responsible for reviewing Oregon's civil laws. The council also develops and amends the Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure and proposes amendments and statutory changes to the legislature. The council is composed of 23 members, including judges, attorneys, and a public member. Members serve without compensation, but receive travel expenses, which are paid out at an $8,000 biennial contribution by the Oregon State Bar. A half-time executive assistant and a .21 FTE director support the council. The University of Oregon provides workspace for the office. The recommended budget for the council is $98,340, the general fund and 8,000 other funds. That's the 8,000 from the Bar Association. This is a reduction of 0.3% from the governor's recommended budget and a 9.1% from the 99-2001 estimated expenditures. The budget includes assessment reductions for PERS, Secretary of State audits, and the Attorney General. The budget also includes a 1% co-chair reduction in services and supplies. Mr. Chair, there was a discussion in the committee about the new commission that has recently been established, the Oregon Law Commission, and whether or not the council and the commission duplicate each other's activities. It's our belief that they do not, but we ask them to communicate with each other and check on that and report back to us at some point as to whether or not there's any duplication. Seems to me, as one member of the subcommittee, that they're both really good deals for the state, and we recommend approval of this budget.
Okay. Is there further discussion? Not. Senator Trow now moves that the committee report out House Bill 5009 as amended with a do pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Not. It's been so approved. House Bill 5021, Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 5021 is the budget bill for the Commission on Judicial Fitness and Disability. The commission was established in 1968 and investigates misconduct complaints against judges. If the investigation uncovers evidence, the commission holds an administrative hearing to gather the facts. The commission makes recommendations to the Supreme Court regarding the disciplinary action to be taken. The commission has 9 members, including 3 judges, 3 attorneys, and 3 public members. Those members serve without compensation but receive per diem and travel expenses. The agency is staffed with a 0.25 FTE clerical assistant and a 0.50 executive director. Investigative services are provided through contract. The recommended budget for the commission is $198,407 general fund. This is a reduction of 5.9% from the governor's recommended budget and a decrease of 1.6% from the 99-01 estimated expenditures. The budget is reduced by $11,000 for investigation costs. This level is consistent with recent biennial disciplinary costs. The commission may need to request funding from the emergency board if there are extraordinary expenses. The budget includes assessment reductions for PERS, Secretary of State audits, and the Attorney General. The budget also includes a 1% co-chair reduction in services and supplies. The Public Safety Subcommittee unanimously recommends approval of this budget, and I thank the work of Representative Hansen and Senator Troll, along with the other members of that subcommittee.
Thank you. Is there a discussion? Not. The motion is to recommend the bill reported out to the House as amended with a do pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Not. It's been so approved. House Bill 5022. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 5022 is the budget bill for the Department of Justice. The budget comes to you from the Public Safety Subcommittee, where it was passed with unanimous support. The main function of the Department of Justice is to provide legal services for state agencies. Other department activities include district attorney assistance, criminal intelligence investigations, crime victim assistance, consumer protection, Medicaid fraud investigation and prosecution, and regulation of charitable activities. The recommended budget totals $210.4 million, of which the general fund support is $21.2 million. The recommended budget reduces the hourly rate charge for legal services from the $106 per hour in the governor's recommended budget to $97. This $9 per hour reduction will reduce statewide costs for legal services in the 01-03 biennium by approximately $6.3 million. The hourly rate reduction was made based on revising billing expectations and experience, revised funding estimates derived from analysis of expenditure patterns, implementation of a retainer program to address cash flow problems, and the co-chair's budget reduction to reinvest the $2.4 million general fund statewide savings that will be derived from the rate reduction back into the DOJ budget to virtually eliminate underfunding of mandated programs. The subcommittee also reduced the governor's recommended budget by 11 positions and $3.4 million other funds. The recommended budget allows authorized limited duration positions and those filled on a temporary basis to continue. It also allows 16 new positions to be established based on workload, client agency demand for services, and clearly identified funding sources. The new positions will support family law, civil recovery, financial fraud, charitable programs, consumer protection, information services support, and crime victim services. The agency is directed to take several specific actions to improve its collection of accounts receivables. It is also expected to explore ways to reduce agency demand for legal services, make more cost-effective use of existing DOJ resources, and develop a comprehensive performance measurement system. Public Safety Subcommittee unanimously recommends your approval.
I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Senator Miller and the Public Safety Subcommittee on working on this Department of Justice budget and hourly rate. It's really a complicated issue, and you really are to be commended as a whole for the committee for your work on this, and I appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Again,
okay.
Thanks to Representative Hansen and Senator Troll and the others.
Okay. Is there further discussion? Senator Yee.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to ask the question on use of lay representatives. Does this mean agencies can use private attorneys whenever it's figures out to be advantageous?
Well, it's a combination, I would suspect, of both Mr. Chairman and Senator Yee, of lay individuals are not necessarily attorneys to the extent that maybe they can have help from competent individuals who could help them with rule understandings, be present at hearings and assist them in a probably less costly way than having a DOJ attorney there is, we think, wise policy.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to say I think it's a good idea whenever agencies are far away and they can have access to local attorneys or legal people much more easily and maybe less cost than $97 an hour.
We hope so.
Mm-hmm. Is there going to be a report to the legislature regarding the use of lay representatives?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Yee, that's certainly something the committee was interested in, and we spent an awful lot of time trying to do a couple of things, figure out how to drive that rate down and how to expand on the gatekeeper function so that agencies really don't, one, just always make a call anytime they think there's a legal issue. Somebody higher up in the agency needs to sign off on the use of that attorney. And also, there's instruction to the Department of Justice, don't go ahead and just have a free hand in running up the bill either, because some of us who have practiced law in our life know that your pursuit of better strategy for your client never ends. And you can just study and study and fill those hours until the cows come home, and we need to check it on both ends.
Okay, thank you. Further questions or discussions? Senator Miller now moves that the committee recommend House Bill 5022, Department of Justice, out to the House with a due pass recommendation as amended. Is there further discussion? Is there objection? If not, it's been so approved. House Bill 5026, Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 5026 is the budget bill for the Oregon State Library. This agency provides research services to state government, supplies reading materials to blind and printed disabled Oregonians, and assist local libraries in improving the overall quality of library services through consultation and distribution of federal and state grant funds, including the state's Ready to Read grants for children's programs. The budget is supported by general fund, other funds, and federal funds. The Education Subcommittee approved a budget of $227,499 total funds, a 5.9% increase over 9901 estimated expenditures. This increase is primarily due to additional Federal Library Services and Technology Act grant funds to local library projects. The budget was decreased by $2,567 general fund, $5,496 other funds, and $628 federal funds for revised PERS rates. The budget maintains the Ready to Read grant program at the 9901 funding level of $1.4 million.
The subcommittee reluctantly approved the package in the governor's budget that decreases the grant program by $35,216 general fund through elimination of the standard inflation adjustment. This adjustment historically has not been added to the program since it has been funded on a rate per child basis. The subcommittee heard that the 2001-03 population estimate in the 01 to 14 age group eligible for the program resulted in a per child funding amount of about $1.02 for 2001-03, slightly higher than the $1 per child provided this biennium. The Education Subcommittee recommends approval of the bill as amended.
Thank you very much, Representative. Is there a discussion? If not, Representative Winter now moves that the committee recommends the bill reported out do pass as amended to the House with a do pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? If not, it's been so approved. House Bill 5040, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 5040 is the budget bill for the Secretary of State. The governor's recommended budget is $39.2 million, $11 million general fund, and $28.2 million other fund. Recommended $11 million general fund is $3.5 million less than the Secretary of State's budget request and $271,000 less than the current service level. The $3.5 million was not identified in any specific division, program, or enhancement package. The $28.2 million of other fund recommended reflected all of the Secretary of State's other funds requests. Your subcommittee accommodated all of Secretary of State's other fund enhancements. We provided additional staff to, number one, meet the contracting needs, number two, expand the effort center, and finally, an additional information technology, that's IT support, due principally to the increased needs of the corporate and audit divisions. We also accommodated the additional changes Secretary of State Bradbury asked for during his presentations. We've asked for additional expenditures limitations relating to personnel actions to be unscheduled, pending a review by Department of Administrative Services, Human Resource Services Division for consistency of those actions, state personnel laws and policies. Also ask that the expenditures limitation granted for additional IT support of corporation audit divisions be unscheduled, pending review of the appropriate legislative committee. We could not accommodate any of the general fund enhancements because the constraints on the general fund. Your subcommittee also identified additional savings due to the PERS rate adjustments, Attorney General's rate changes as been identified today, and changes in the Department of Administrative Services assessment, but did not, however, reduce the general fund appropriation below the governor's recommendation. We have noted the Secretary's priorities for his support for budget report and recommend that they be priority items on the add-back list so the future funding availability permits, as those funds may be and available. And we've heard today that there's not great likelihood of those coming in, but your subcommittee recommends approval of House Bill 5040 as amended.
Representative Butler now moves that the committee recommend House Bill 5040 out to the House as amended with a do-pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Senator Dukes.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I just wanted to put on the record my concern for a part of this budget. There are only two pieces that are general fund, and one of those is elections. The Secretary of State made it very clear in his presentation that in the last primary and general elections, had anyone taken vacation or gotten sick, they would not have been able to get the statutorily required work out, the voter's pamphlet, and those sorts of things, to meet the statutory deadlines. And they did all, what they did accomplish, they accomplished with the use of a temporary employee. So they made their baseline needs in that way. And as we all know, we have good reasons for saying you don't keep temporary employees on forever. So somewhere around July, this person's going away. And I came to the definite belief that this budget takes the Secretary of State's office elections division down below what they need to meet their statutory requirements. And that was why I voted no in committee. I I don't have any problem cutting budgets, but I think that if we have statutes requiring that agencies do certain things, that we are obligated to give them the staff to be able to do that. And in this particular case, we did not. And not because we were mean-spirited or anything. I mean, the committee really wanted to, and as Representative Butler has pointed out, that's at the top of the list for the add-backs. It's just I keep looking at revenues and wondering if we're ever going to get to add-backs. So that was a no.
Okay. Thank you. Is there further discussion? Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Took a little different tact, I guess. I'm delighted the subcommittee did not approve the four new positions in light of other needs in this this state. I think that's probably one of the, shouldn't be on the top of the add-back list. Also, I wonder if there was any discussion at all about perhaps causing some of those who use the voter's pamphlet to pay something that somewhat resembles the cost that all the taxpayers of this state have to bear for the advertising that they get.
Representative Butler?
Thank you. There wasn't specific discussion relative to any increases, the substantive issues that surround the increases, the increased use of the voter's manual and pamphlets and so forth. Certainly that has been a discussion as we've gone along, and that would be a method of raising a few hundred thousand dollars potentially over a period of time, but no, there were no discussions about making any substantive changes at this particular point in time. But certainly it's food for thought.
Is there further discussion? If not, is there further objection other than Senator Duke? The record will reflect that Senator Duke votes no, and the motion passes. House Bill, or Senate Bill 5537, Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 5537 is the budget bill for the Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision. This board sets dates of release for offenders convicted of committing crimes prior to November 1, 1989. It determines when offenders sentenced as dangerous offenders should be released. It approves release plans, establishes conditions of community supervision, administers parole violation hearings, and notifies victims of hearings and releases. This board is supported almost entirely by general fund dollars. The recommended budget for the board is $2.9 million, which is a 3% increase from 9901 estimated expenditures. The budget provides funding necessary for the board to continue current services. The Public Safety Subcommittee reduced the governor's budget by $29,103 based on rate reductions applied to charges for attorney general services, central government service charges, Secretary of State audits, first employer contributions, and telecommunications. The Public Safety Subcommittee also directed the board to develop a detailed work plan for its systems analyst based on function automation and process streamlining priorities, work closely with the Department of Justice, Judicial Department, and Dispute Resolution Commission to identify ways to contain legal costs, increase the percentage of supervision orders that are provided to community corrections offices before offenders are released from prison, monitor the number of parole violation hearings to ensure that counties receive appropriate reimbursements, and make a concerted effort to reduce the amount of archives building space it uses. The Public Safety Subcommittee unanimously recommends approval.
Is there further discussion? If not, is there any objection to Senator Miller's motion that Senate Bill 5537, as amended, be reported out to the Senate with a due pass recommendation? Motion passed. Senate Bill 5543, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 5543 is the budget bill for the State Board of Tax Service Examiners. The board regulates the practice and performance of tax preparers, tax consultants, tax businesses by enforcing state laws and rules. The board is 100% other funds. The board's other funds come primarily from the annual licensing and business registration fees of these who use the board services. The subcommittee of the general government recommends a budget of $888,913 other funds with five full-time positions. It is 1.5% below the governor's recommended budget. It's 11.7% above the current service level budget. The subcommittee approved several items to facilitate the board's accountability. A position was added to strengthen investigating efforts, especially in the Hispanic community, where there have been a number of complaints. Subcommittee adjusted the budget to lower the PERS rates and lower rates for the Department of Administrative Services Human Resource Assessment. Subcommittee also reduced the Attorney General Services and Hearings Panel expenditure. In addition, the subcommittee added a budget note, quite severe budget note, that requires the board to report back on key performance areas such as the compliance of tax preparers in this state and their error rate compared to us, as compared to other states. The Subcommittee on General Government does recommend your approval of Senate Bill 5543 as amended.
Is there further discussion? Is there objection to Representative Butler's amendment or motion to recommend that Senate Bill 5543 be reported out to the Senate as amended with a due pass recommendation? Is there objection? Not, it's been so approved. Senator Duncan, would you like to share with us some news?
Well, yes, I have some rather sad news. Excuse me. I've been running in and out this morning. As you know, it's been a tough week for the Hartung family, and Senator Hartung's son passed away last evening. And he's been a diabetic, and I don't know exact causes and everything, but it's not was not expected. As you know, he was bringing Secretary Page, and I have to run meet the Secretary right now to kind of take his place, so excuse me for running in now.
So you might say a prayer and think the positive thought for the Hartung family this weekend, because they've been through their difficult time this week. So with that, thank the committee for your work, and we will see you Monday, and we are adjourned.